bu ba bam ba bu ba bu ba 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 bu ba bu ba bam ba bu ba bu ba bam ba bu ba
bu
ba bam. Yeah. This song was written for Steve Dale, who is here today. Steve is a noted pet expert. And honestly, if you're one of those people who loves the animals, who loves the pets, who better to listen to than Steve Dale? Hi, Steve.
That is my song. In fact, that was me performing it.
Are you doing this?
You're good.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Steve, there's much to discuss in the world of pets.
There is.
Much to discuss.
So we were talking off the air, and this is a podcast that I just did that you can hear at WGNradio.com or WGN Plus.
Mm-hmm.
What do they prefer me saying now? WGN Plus?
Yeah, say WGN
either,
Plus.
Either way.
The bonus hour.
Sounds more positive.
You can find it on iTunes as well.
Yeah.
You can find it walking down Michigan Avenue. Doesn't matter where you are. You could on a CTA bus.
They have it there now?
Yeah, they do.
I didn't know
you
that.
Can find it. You can find it. And this podcast was done with a couple of folks from Ovarian Cancer Symptom Awareness. And we were talking about advances that have been made and how dogs tie into that.
It's amazing.
I think there are 9 types of cancers that dogs can positively identify now.
Doesn't that blow you away, Bill?
Yeah.
And what they do with ovarian cancer, I was talking to the researcher. So what they do is they take some blood of a woman that has ovarian cancer. They take blood of people that have positive issues with in that part of the body, such as a cyst or something of that nature, but not cancer. But something is irregular, so something isn't quite right, but it's not cancer. And then they take normal individuals for sort of a control group. The dogs, well over 90% of the time, can identify which one is the cancer.
So why is that, do you think? What's going on there?
Well, they can identify seemingly specific chemicals in the blood. Now,
so are they smelling it? Or
Yeah. Now,
no, they're psychic dogs.
The question is, what do we do with that information?
Yeah.
So, as much as myself and Wendy would love to visit the doctor and have a dog in every clinic and every visit with us, that's probably
Doggy Hauser.
Yeah, that's.
I just sold a TV show while you were here.
Yeah, you did. Good job.
I don't know how you do.
You're welcome.
what was I saying? So that's not a practical idea, as good of a TV show as that would be.
Yeah.
You said even if we went to the doctor, we would love if we went to the doctor and they could do something.
Wouldn't it be nice if they had a dog in every clinic? But that's not going to happen, obviously.
Yeah.
So what do you do with this information that dogs can identify this? So here's what's happening. They are very, very close now to understanding which chemicals the dog are identifying. If they can do that, then they can come up with a blood test for ovarian cancer. And that would save millions of lives.
Yeah.
The problem with ovarian cancer, stomach cancer, thyroid cancer, a lot of the types of cancers, is that pretty much people are asymptomatic until
it's too late.
Right. So that's why ovarian cancer symptom awareness is so much about educating the general public about what the symptoms are.
Yeah.
But even then, they're generalized symptoms. I feel bloated.
Yeah.
I don't feel quite right.
Steve, enough about you. We're talking about dogs right now. So is it all types of dogs that can do this or just certain breeds?
Well, there seems to be little doubt that a greyhound would not be as good at it as, say, a German shepherd
dog
or a Labrador.
Why do the German shepherds do everything amazingly?
Yeah, they do.
There are a lot of times the canine dogs and
the beagles would do this.
Yeah.
You know, so dogs have about a 150 times better sense of smell than we have.
Mm.
We can't even comprehend what it would be like to be a dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was waiting for a funny line.
No, I agree. Okay, that's true.
Bill would never leave the house if he was a dog.
So we don't even comprehend what it would be like and what their sense of smell, how...
I just got what Wendy said, and I'm offended by it.
How specific this would be. However, it seems some dogs are better at it than others, based on breed, and their ability to please people has something to do with it. And the way in which they're trained is quite incredible, too. So they take a sample that is positive... A ovarian cancer positive blood sample.
Yes.
And they simply reward the dog for smelling it. a couple of times. And they don't reward when they present a blood sample that's normal.
Oh.
Depending on the dog, it takes a matter of days to weeks to figure it out.
Yeah.
Are there false positives because the dog just want to treat?
Yeah, but it doesn't happen very often. As I say, well over 90% of the time, have got it.
That's pretty
amazing. And there's no testing. Well, we don't have testing for ovarian cancer, but there's no testing even for the cancers that we have.
Right.
I don't believe that is quite that good.
All right, so dogs seem to be able to tell when someone has cancer, and cats seem to be able to tell when somebody's about to die, right?
We talked about that with you. Really?
Steve and I talked about that once, that a lot of, like...
Well, you're generalizing, not every
cat. I'm going to freak out every time a cat comes by me.
Well, famously, there was a cat in a nursing home that would visit people.
And suck the life out of them. That's what it did.
Just sit by their door when they were going to die.
It would sit right by them, actually. Yeah. Right with them.
Oh.
And the next thing you knew, the
person
was...
Hello, kitty. Wait, away.
The room was available. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But the point of that is, and there is a point to that, is that our animals know things that we don't even understand how they know.
Like, I know that dogs can act funny before a big storm or something.
Oh, sure.
They can sense that.
Oh, sure.
But, man, it's getting more involved than that.
If you talk to a obstetrician, is that what a baby doctor is?
Mm-hmm.
They will tell you that those tests that turn pink and blue, they're pretty good. But oftentimes, people will come in and say, my dog told me. And then I took the test.
Steve, when I was growing up, I had a gibbon named Peanut.
Oh, God.
Oh, I know, but
he always knew when we were going to have Thai food.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, gibbons are from that part of the world.
It's a mystery to me, but it was always amazing. Gibbon knew when we were going to have Thai food.
Do you ever get the flu?
Every once in a while, yeah.
I don't. I get my flu shots.
Okay. Well, it turns out that if you ever do get the flu in the future, that the medication for the flu might have something to do with a frog.
How so?
The mucous membranes on certain types of frogs are toxic.
Yeah.
Which means they're poisonous.
Yeah.
Right?
We know what toxic means.
Right,
thank
okay.
you.
Yeah. Okay.
We're not as dumb as we look.
No. Well, I'm just walking this
just
along.
For people who don't know, toxic, bad,
it's poison.
Yeah. All right.
People might not know that.
No, it's true.
They may think it's a good thing.
Want toxic.
You don't want to have frog legs with a frog that has this problem.
No.
It's not a problem to the frog. It saves the frog's life.
Yeah.
But it turns out it also kills viruses and bacteria.
How so? How does that happen?
Well, because it's poison, right?
Yeah.
And so what researchers have done is they've taken one species of frog, and they've looked at the peptides that cause the toxicity on the mucous membranes of the frog skin.
Yeah.
And it turns out that this particular species of frog, those mucous membranes, really do kill viruses, including the flu virus. Now, the problem is two of those three peptides may also kill you.
Oh.
So that's bad.
Well, that's the bad news. But the good news is you may not be suffering from the flu anymore.
That's right. No, the third one shows promise. So because of this one species of frog, we could have, at some point in time, a new treatment for the flu.
Oh.
And people die of flu.
Sure, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not only people. This may actually work for dog flu, which incidentally is still around Chicago. And it may work for other types of flu as well.
That's good news. That is good news. All right.
I thought you'd want to hear that.
You also wanted to talk about, and I know that you're very outspoken about this, about the puppy mills, and where are we with the puppy mills right now?
Well, there's still a bill pending in our state in a Senate subcommittee. Now, the House killed the bill. They said this is ridiculous.
It was toxic, Steve.
It was.
Yes.
Because this is what the bill
said.
The bill said that all of the communities in your state, in Illinois, that have passed legislation that say no dogs or cats can be sold at pet stores, that legislation that's already been passed won't work anymore. It would be null and void. And going forward, you won't be able to pass any legislation. So what kind of bill is that, not allowing communities to do what they want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Moreover, it helps puppy mills because dogs and cats sold to pet stores are often from such facilities. In fact, they pretty much always are from such facilities. Now, in part, I am told, because of the publicity that I did, and for other reasons as well, the state of Georgia similar sort of legislation, and the state of Tennessee have now said, no way, this legislation is going nowhere in our state. However, in Illinois, it still sits in some Senate subcommittee. Hopefully, will die out right there and won't go forward, because you think that Illinois senators have other things to worry about, like the budget.
But you've made some pretty big phone calls to people saying
I have
it needs
made.
To be done.
Yeah.
Do you know who I am?
Yeah.
I'm noted pedics
for Steve Dale. Do you know what toxic means?
Bill is toxic.
Yes.
Speaking of which,
yes.
The Puppy Mill Project that helps support good laws such as no dogs or cats should be sold at pet stores. And by the way, Chicago's hardly the only city now that has such a law. There are well over 200 cities around the U.S. and Canada that have similar laws.
There should be more cities.
Yeah, and every day, it seems big cities and small cities are adding their names to this. A couple of weeks ago, it was San Francisco. So cities are doing this all over America, taking matters into their own hand.
Mm-hmm.
It began with the Puppy Mill Project, and their big benefit is coming up. It's called Mothers in the Mill. It's May 13th at the Moonlight Studios at 7 p.m. On my website, I have lots of information and a link where you could say, yeah, I want to go. I'll get tickets to that. Paul Lisnick is the MC to this. So people need to go to keep the MC awake in this case.
Paul has narcolepsy, can't help it. He falls asleep
He's
easily.
He's old, what can I say?
Sure.
But nevertheless, this is an important function to demonstrate your support. I will be there as well because Paul needs someone to make fun of.
All right, that'll be fun. And then it wouldn't be a visit with you if we didn't talk about Lyme disease for at least a second or two. What's going on there?
So this is the craziest thing, how ticks are taking over America. There really is like an epidemic
of ticks.
Yeah.
Why more than usual? Is it the weather?
Yes, it is, right? In part, yeah. The weather has a lot to do with it. So we had this, and we've had these incredibly mild winters.
Yeah.
And the ticks are saying, woohoo, hooray!
Party time.
Exactly right. But it's more than that. It's the white-footed mouse.
Ugh.
So in
the worst.
Yes.
Don't get me started on the white-footed mouse, Wendy.
Racist.
I'm not a fan.
Well, they're cute. They're cute.
They are adorable. They are cute.
But I don't like their disposition.
Yeah, and I just don't like seeing them in my house.
No. And what's more, these are the guys really responsible more than any other creature for Lyme disease.
The white-footed mouse is?
Yes.
Because why?
Well, here's what happens. Ticks at the nymph stage, ticks go through several different stages.
Wendy's in that stage right now.
And at this one stage where they look like a pinhead, gives you more to work
no.
with.
No. Some of them are too easy.
You're not going there.
Some are too easy.
But that's about how big they are. They're only as big as a pinhead.
Wow. Yeah.
But if a possum, a squirrel, a raccoon can identify the ticks on them.
Yeah.
They groom them off, sometimes eating them.
Oh, yeah.
If they can.
Yeah.
The mice seem to like it. They don't care.
There can be
100 ticks. Now, these mice are no bigger than your fish.
Sure.
And there can be 100 ticks, imagine, on one mouse. And what happens is these ticks are not carrying disease until they bite the mice.
Oh.
And that is how Lyme actually begins. So if there are more of these mice than ever before, the other issue is mice like the species of mice love acorns. And because of the weather, the trees that drop the acorns are just proliferating.
Sure.
So in every which way, everything is in favor of these mice.
Yeah.
Which means the more mice, the more Lyme. And that's what's happening now. So the U.S. government, and I don't know if Donald Trump knows about this, is actually going to implement some birth control. They are
for the mice?
Little condoms, Wendy. Very small.
Yes. Little white condoms.
Yeah, this big.
For the white-footed mice.
They're so small.
They are dropping feed, which includes birth control, to these mice. At least they may do that.
Making them infertile.
Right.
How about that? How about that? Who came up with this plan?
It wasn't me, but you
Masters
only...
and Johnson.
Mousters and Johnson.
You can only hear about... I bet people haven't heard about this except on the Bill and Wendy show.
Yeah. That's amazing to me.
Yeah.
You have heartworm medication that you're supposed to give your, is it cats too?
Well, yeah, cats get heartworm too. It's dogs that we talk about the most, but I'm glad you brought that up because cats do get heartworm. And in dogs, it presents one, it's almost like two different diseases. It's like the heartworm themselves say, we don't want to be in this cat, but we're here. What do we do now? Mm-hmm. So when cats have heartworm, it's a limited number of heartworm typically. It's two or three or four heartworm. In dogs, depending on where you live in the country, you can have a load of 50 or over that many.
Enjoy
heartworm.
Your lunch, everyone.
Well, yeah, these are spaghetti long shaped when they get to be adults.
Yeah.
And imagine that in your respiratory system. Well, that's what some of these dogs have. You know, so no wonder some of the dogs just don't make it. In cats, heartworm can cause sudden death, which is never a good thing.
No. All right, but I'm supposed to give Tiki a heartworm pill every month on the same time every month, mm-hmm. and sometimes I forget and skip a month. Is that a big deal?
Sort of, but you're not alone if okay. it makes you feel any better. So the biggest issue is compliance. People forget, which include veterinary professionals, by the way. You know, I mean,
it
everyone's
happens.
Human.
Yeah, I got to put an alert on my phone so it'll pop up.
So people do that now. That's exactly what people do. They put little stickers on the refrigerator. It's like whatever works for you. If you skip 1 month, that's the thing about year-long prevention, why I'm such a fan of that, because if you do forget 1 month, you have such a great deal of heartworm medication in your pet already that it is less likely to make a difference.
All right, I'll
you
try
feel
to
better
remember.
Now?
Yeah, I do feel
that's better.
Better
news. Mm-hmm. He's noted pet expert Steve
Where?
Dale. He's right over there.
Oh.
Noted pet expert Steve Dale. If people
what, you guys
know,
have a cheer you've been working on?
Yeah.
Where?
We rehearsed it.
It's on fire?
If people want to know more, if they want to hear more, Steve, their best bet is to do what?
Go to my website. That is stevedale.tv.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Greatly appreciated. We'll get a little break in for some news, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy WGN. Bill Leffis, Wendy Snyder. Did you see what, or hear what, Ronald Reagan's son, Michael, said about Bill O'Reilly?
No.
This is great. Michael Reagan, son of the late President Ronald Reagan, defended disgraced Fox News host Bill O'Reilly, who was ousted this week after advertisers boycotted the show en masse, that's French, amid a sexual harassment scandal. The firestorm started after the New York Times revealed that Bill O'Reilly and the network had come to an agreement. He'd be getting $13 million in settlements.
Nice settlement, by the way.
Accusing him of sexual harassment. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was his settlement.
He got $25 million to leave. They paid him. His walking money was $25 million. Thanks for disgracing yourself and the network. Here's $25 million.
So how does that hurt him then?
Well, it hurt him because I think he had 2 or 3 years left on his deal.
Is he going to run out of money by
no,
then?
He'll be fine. He'll be fine. But in 2 tweets that were sent out late Thursday evening, Michael Reagan first specifically referenced one of the allegations about Bill O'Reilly. This is the allegation that he referred to a black woman as hot chocolate and he leered at her and then suggested that women invite attention by how they dress. So his first tweet was this, Michael Reagan, his words. Hot chocolate used to be a compliment on your looks. Today, it's called sexual harassment. He then bettered himself by saying this. If women are going to wear low-cut dresses that show cleavage, don't be harassed when we men look, or should we sue for sexual arousal?
I am in disbelief over this.
Yes.
And if I'm wearing, you know, a shirt that reveals some, you can look, but keep your comments to yourself. I look at women when they have low-cut tops on. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I don't just go, wow.
Right. Right.
I keep it to myself.
It's... I don't even know what to make of this.
I wish someone would call me hot chocolate or white chocolate.
All right,
with nuts.
You get with nuts for sure.
Work out perfectly.
Definitely with nuts. There's no doubt. I think I understand. I think, and in italics, I think I understand what Michael Reagan is trying to say. However, I hope he knows that what he's saying couldn't be more unfounded. No, you can't sue for sexual arousal, Michael. Women dress.
Men would sue every day.
Yeah.
Every, what is it, 11 seconds?
Wow, yeah, they say that men think about sex every 11 seconds. So, yeah, there'd be a lawsuit.
Ew. I'm with you every one of those 11 seconds between 10 and 1.
They didn't say me. They said most guys.
You're older, but still, every 50 seconds.
It's about every 50 seconds for me. 11 seconds. I wouldn't have time to eat M&M's.
Yeah, but who can wait that long?
That's too long. It's too long. So, yeah, I would say it started out stupid with the hot chocolate reference. And then he sunk the three-pointer from downtown with the could men sue for sexual arousal.
What does Michael Reagan do?
I think he's a syndicated talk show host, isn't he?
Oh, well, that's...
Isn't he? I think that's what he does. So you think there's the possibility he says something like this to get his name out there, maybe.
Get his name out there, but maybe he'll be like Bill O'Reilly and get $23 million to leave.
Right. Maybe.
He's working that angle.
Maybe.
I'm tired of this.
Well, now have you heard Sean Hannity has been accused of inviting a Fox News guest to his hotel room?
That there may be an update to that story.
I do have the update.
Yeah, because that was the story that came out over the weekend, but then they've backed down a little bit from
this. Yes, because Debbie Schlussel, a former Fox News guest.
Hotz & Peppt Incorporated.
That means key in German.
Does it, is that what it means?
Yeah, it means key.
All right. I got to think of more German words. Mm-hmm. Nine.
That's the number after eight, Wendy. Come on. It's easy.
Debbie Schlussel, a former Fox News guest, appeared on a local radio show Friday, recounted an incident where Sean Hannity purportedly asked her to a hotel. When she rebuffed his advances, she claims she was ostracized by the network star. The story went viral over the weekend, which I didn't hear about.
Yeah. It got a lot of play.
But now in an interview with LawNews.com on Monday morning, Schlussel is denying that she was ever sexually harassed by Sean Hannity.
Just that he invited her to a hotel room and that was it?
While Schlussel stands by her description of the incident, Schlussel told us that she doesn't believe what happened between the two amounted to sexual harassment by any legal definition.
So what do you think happened there? Did somebody say to her, think about this before... What do you think happened?
I personally don't think there was a story.
Yeah.
Because if it happened...
Right.
You fight it till the end.
Yeah.
But here's her quote. I would never accuse him of that. Sexual harassment has a special meaning under the law, and I would never accuse him of that. She's an attorney herself. She said the interaction happened in the early 2000s when Hannity was in Detroit taping a show. He tried to get me to go back to the hotel after the show, after he and his executive producer, Bill Shine, treated me horribly. Schlussel later claimed that if it wasn't his hotel room, but rather his hotel, she told LawNews.com that she did go on the show following the incident, but after that was banned from Fox News. That's not sexual harassment.
Not very nice.
It's not nice, but I don't know that it qualifies. Does it qualify as sexual harassment? Probably not.
No, and again...
But does Bill O'Reilly referring to a black coworker as what was his words?
Hot chocolate.
Hot chocolate. Does that count? Is that sexual harassment, or is that just a poor taste in judgment? What does that qualify as?
See, I honestly don't know the law, and
yeah.
I got to be 100% honest with you. Working in radio for 30 years, there have been things that have been said to me, not by you.
By Bob Kessler?
Not by Bob Kessler.
All right.
But there have been numerous things that have been said that I just kind of, oh, shut up, you know? It's
But some guys are just snakes.
But I just kind of let it roll off, and I know that women shouldn't be fearful to come into work, and I never was. It never got to that point. But so I don't really know the boundaries.
Right. But you could certainly see, I mean, my heart always goes out to women who are in work situations where they're propositioned by guys, you know, at a higher level or an equal level, or sometimes even not, you know, they're not at the same level. But it must be horrible to work in a job situation like that where you're getting that constantly, a barrage of that.
But then some women can just go, oh, go home to your wife, leave me alone, and it stops.
Yeah.
I just feel sorry for the victim who is not able to stand up for herself and who has kids and might be a single mom,
right,
who needs to keep this job and deals with this crap.
Absolutely.
Every day.
It's terrible.
That's not fair.
It's awful.
So I don't know if hot
I would just
chocolate...
hate to work with Bill O'Reilly anyway, even if he didn't say anything awful. Just to know Bill O'Reilly was nearby, I'd feel dirty. He's just such a... He's just such a, I don't know what he is. I don't know.
He doesn't do it for you.
No.
Never has?
Never has.
Not even Inside Edition Bill O'Reilly when he had...
No, especially not.
That hair, the comb over.
No. No. But that's when he had that famous... Yeah.
Do it live.
You've heard that tirade, right? Of him getting upset over the way a cue card was written.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He doesn't know what the term play it out means.
Right.
Play it out. What does that mean?
Right.
We'll do it live.
Yeah.
But I just have so many questions. If this woman is an attorney, Debbie Schlussel, former Fox News guest, how can you say this? Because I didn't hear this. This broke over the weekend on Friday.
Yeah. It's because, you know, obviously... They have painted Fox News between Roger Ailes and now Bill O'Reilly as a very hostile work environment for any woman. And several women have left on their own accord. And, you know, it really it's making them look horrible and probably rightfully so. If everything they're saying about Ailes is true and Bill O'Reilly is true, you knew at some point somebody was going to have a story or two about Sean Hannity. It just seemed natural. And that's what happened over the weekend.
I still don't think it's okay to just go, well, technically, she's an attorney. Now, can't she be sued for
I don't know
raking his name over the coals without any truth to it?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm not sure.
Why doesn't anybody tell the truth anymore, and why can't we just try to be nice to each
Those
other?
Those days are gone.
Isn't that really all we need to do? Be nice to people and tell the truth?
Nope.
I cannot stand a liar. Honest to God, that is the one thing.
I know.
I have told my kids that on numerous occasions. It's like, if you do something, just come forward and tell me. If you lie about it.
It's easier that way. It is, right?
It is.
You can, if something's wrong, you can maybe fix the problem.
My parents told me when I was so little, I don't remember what age, but they said the only thing that could ever make us stop loving you is if you lied.
That's harsh.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure you lied one time in your life.
I would embellish the truth from time to time.
You?
Yeah. But I don't remember what brought that on, but I still remember my mom. And I was, you know that thing you do when you're a kid? I don't think adults are capable of this. But you're crying so hard you can't catch your breath.
Yeah,
and then he told me that thing. So I don't remember what brought that on, but somebody lied to somebody. And my dead mom gave you, well, somebody's got to tell them this. And my mom said, the only thing you could ever do that would make us stop loving you is if you lied. And I went, oh, that's serious. I can't do it anymore.
Well, once somebody lies to you, don't you have a hard time believing anything they say ever again?
Right.
I mean,
your reputation's over then, right?
I can't stand a liar. So I don't understand how this happened, but I didn't know about this breaking news over the weekend.
Yes.
Who's next on Fox to be accused of something?
I don't know who's left over there. They're dropping like flies.
Shepard Smith is there.
Shepard Smith
has done no harm.
He seems cool. You know, he seems like he'd be cool.
Yes.
And I like that guy.
Yes.
I kind of do, too.
He's the one, he breaks ranks every once in a while with what Fox News is. You know, every once in a while, if he feels a certain way on something, he goes against the grain.
He pounds his desk.
And
we don't do that in America.
Right.
We don't. I can't quite do much. I'm working on my Shepard. I'm workshopping it.
That's right. It's
workshopping it.
It's come along. It'll be fine. All right, let's do this. We will take a break.
Thank you, Bob Kessler.
Thanks, Bob Kessler.
You're
from
welcome.
The radio. You know Bob from the radio. So we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and we have more stuff ahead. It's Bill and Wendy at WGN.
Are we staying alive on the stream?
Yes. There's no question about it.
You know what's... this hasn't happened in a while. However, with the news of Erin Moran, Joni Cunningham from Happy Days, after the news of her death over the weekend on Facebook, I saw another celebrity death.
And I was concerned.
And it turns out it's a hoax. But now remember, it seemed like it was Fast and Furious that all these death hoaxes were happening, and then it seemed to have stopped.
I think because we were getting so many actual celebrity deaths, there wasn't time for a celebrity death hoax.
Oh, yeah.
Could that be it?
That could be it.
Who died that didn't die?
Eddie Murphy.
Oh, really?
And the thing...
That's not the first time with him. That is... Now, his brother, Charlie Murphy, died a week ago. But Eddie Murphy has been rumored to have died a couple of times in the last few years.
All right. Well, I just remember when I saw it, it was from someone I knew.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh my God, that's terrible. And then like the second comment under it was, this is fake. This is fake.
Yeah.
So I looked it up. And yes, Charlie Murphy died in early April after battling leukemia. So when I see Eddie Murphy died, he was the passenger in a Porsche and someone else was driving and it was a fiery crash and it killed Eddie Murphy. I remember thinking, oh my God, his brother just passed away.
Right.
That poor family.
Yeah.
And then I realized it was a
hoax. It was fake.
And when I told Jimmy Mack about it, I said, oh my God, it looks like Eddie Murphy died in a Porsche accident. And he said, a Porsche accident? What happened? I said, no, Porsche. I guess I should have specified. But it's a hoax if you saw it. I have not seen very many since then, but he died at 54. You didn't see that on Facebook over the weekend?
No, I have a filter on mine that only tells me real stories. He was on my internet.
Murphy, 54, was a passenger in a Porsche sports car driven by a friend who also died when it crashed north of
Los
Angeles.
What's the website that had incorrectly reported this? Does it say?
No.
It doesn't?
No. And see, and I notice things on Facebook as you go on it now. It's like, we're trying to cut back on fake news. Check your sources. But how do you even...
I don't know. I don't know.
There are so many good hackers out there that even if you check the sources, it looks
legit.
For reals.
It does seem legit. On Saturday, a Hollywood legend turned 80. It's hard to believe it, but Jack Nicholson is 80 years old.
I saw a lot of tributes to him over the weekend.
He was, when we were growing up, especially like if you watched the Academy Awards, he was the coolest of the cool in Hollywood. You couldn't be cooler than Jack Nicholson. And it's just hard to imagine. Like, the Jack Nicholson in my head is right around 35 or 40, but he's 80 as of Saturday. So what they did over at MSN is they listed all. He's been the lead, not just an actor in a movie, but he's been the lead in 50 movies. They listed all 50. We're not going to go through all 50, but let's do like the top 10. I'll tell you what MSN decided were the greatest roles that Jack Nicholson ever played in. When I was in college at Columbia, we did a class where we studied his movie Five Easy Pieces. We did a frame by frame on Five Easy Pieces for 12 weeks. And really, to do that successfully, it has to be a great movie. And Five Easy Pieces is a good movie.
Not great.
For me, it's not a great movie. It's got a great message, and it's really nice for the times, like early 1970-ish. But
I don't know if I saw that.
It's hard to watch a movie for 12 weeks. You know, there's a couple movies that I would sit there.
Lady like and we the also Tramp, did. You could have.
Lady and the Tramp, obviously. There's no argument at all. We did the same with a couple of other movies. Like, there's some Hitchcock films that we did, and we did Citizen Kane, and that was a good 12 weeks.
Do you know I have not seen that movie ever?
Oh, it's so good. It's just so good.
I got to watch that this summer. That's what I'm going
to
do.
Are you going to spend the summer watching Citizen Kane?
Week by week. I'm going to do frame by frame like you did.
I'll get my teacher to come to your house. All right. So these are what MSN considers Jack's greatest performances, and they leave off. There's some lower ones. Like, did you ever see About Schmidt? This is when Jack Nicholson plays just kind of your standard salesman who at some point it's known by his company that you've outlasted your welcome, that you're too old for us anymore. So they kind of put him out to pasture and he's just kind of bored. There's nothing for him to do. And even watching that movie's like 10 or 15 years old, I realized that there comes a time in most people's life where you live this moment and you don't want to, but you do.
And he did a good job.
So good in that. There's also a movie, The Last Detail, he was in, a Hal Ashby movie from the early 70s that he was so good in. And As Good as It Gets, which I think got an Academy Award nomination, but I don't think he won. All those were not mentioned in the... Carnal Knowledge, I forgot, too. He's really good in that with Candice Bergen and Anne Margaret. All right, so these were his top 10 roles. Heartburn, he's really good at it. He's always good. He's Jack Nicholson. He plays Carl Bernstein in that. It's the relationship between Carl Bernstein and Nora Ephron, kind of based on their real-life story. Number 9, J.J. Giddies, the detective in Chinatown. Did you ever see Chinatown?
No.
Oh, he's so good. So good.
I don't think I saw all of it, so I need to watch that, too. I'm making a list about
Schmidt. You got to see Chinatown. That's a Roman Polanski movie. It's he and Faye Dunaway.
And I love her.
A Few Good Men, which is the movie, whenever you see an impressionist do an impression of Jack Nicholson, they tend to gravitate toward his performance in
you
A Few Good Men.
You Can't Handle the Truth?
That's the one. But you have to take your hand and pull your hair back and say it like this. You can't handle the truth like that. You got to pull your hair all the way back. Then Batman, where he played the Joker.
He was good in that.
You know what's funny is when he played the Joker, I thought to myself, this is perfect. Who could possibly do a better job playing the Joker than Jack Nicholson? And then Heath Ledger came along and did a better job.
But a different job. Heath Ledger.
He was absolutely psychotic.
He was.
Dangerous.
So you get the Joker. Batman was on this weekend. It's on all the time. And Jim and I were watching it. And I was just looking at it going, oh, my God, how hokey is this?
It's really hokey. And yet it's got these moments that are really good. It's Tim Burton, and it's an uneven movie.
No, but I'm talking about the original series I came across this weekend.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's like Peter Ustinov was in something. Was he King Tut or something?
No, Victor Bono was King Tut.
That is? All right.
Yeah.
I don't know who. Maybe it was.
They have a similar build.
All right, because that's who I thought it was. And I'm looking at this going, oh, my God, this is the
it was the campiest show in the history of television.
But back then, it was like it was so believable. And
so colorful, too.
So I'm a Batman fan, and I love Jack Nicholson, and I loved Heath Ledger, but Heath just took it to such a deep, dark...
Right. Right. He was great.
He
Jack Nicholson
good,
but Heath Ledger better.
I agree.
Jack Nicholson in Easy Rider was number 6 in the greatest roles of Jack Nicholson's career. What'd you think?
Pretty great.
Yeah. Yep. He and Peter Fonda. The Departed, number 5.
Didn't see that.
He plays Frank Costello. You would love The Departed.
Writing that down.
Yeah, you got to see that. That's really good. Everybody in that's really good. Number 4 is one of the most overrated movies I've ever seen, Terms of Endearment. I know it's a heartbreaker. I get it. But it's a little manipulative, a little bit.
I love that movie.
Do you?
But yes, we were made to cry.
Yeah.
I mean.
That was written to make people cry. 5 Easy Pieces, the movie I just described to you that I watched in painstaking detail over a series of 12 weeks as we watched it frame by frame. And I kept going, isn't there a fast forward button? Didn't they make a fast forward button, please? Number 2 was Jack Torrance in The Shining.
That is the best.
Yeah.
I'm anxious to hear what number one is.
There's one better. But they say The Shining is Jack Nicholson at his peak crazy. That's excellent. At his peak crazy, bug-eyed, limping, and unpredictably erratic self, his leering grin as he says, "Here's Johnny," is an indelible image to pure madness.
That is one of the best movies ever.
He's really good. He's really good in that. And according to MSN, the top Jack Nicholson role of all time, the definitive role for Jack Nicholson, is when he plays McMurphy in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
All right.
Hard to disagree.
I've completely forgot about that.
You know what's funny? If you look at these roles, he plays a man who is borderline insane in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He plays a man who is borderline insane in The Shining. He plays a man who is borderline insane in Batman. 5 Easy Pieces, he's heading that way. Terms of Endearment, he's an astronaut with some personality disorder. In Departed, he's a gangster with a little tinge of that. Almost every one of these roles, he's somebody who's really just trying to figure himself out and can't seem to do it. You know, that's a running theme with every one of his best roles.
The Shining is one of those movies that is just so creepy good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now I'm envisioning Heath Ledger playing it in a remake of it.
Of The Shining?
Yeah, wouldn't he have been good?
As Jack Torrance? Yes. Well, they did remake it. They did a TV version of it. And it's one of the guys from Wings.
Tim Daly?
No. It's the guy who's not Tim Daly on Wings.
Well, then it doesn't matter.
The guy with the better hair. I can't think of his name. But he played it in that. And it's really weird because as much as, like, whenever people talk about Stephen King movies, like books into movies, The Shining is the one that everybody goes, oh, that's the best. But Stephen King himself didn't like that version of it, didn't like what Stanley Kubrick did to the story.
I loved it.
Yeah,
Stephen Weber.
Stephen Weber. That's the guy.
I didn't see that version of The Shining.
You know what? It's really good, but it's not as good as the movie version. It's just not as good. But it's so worth saying. And I just read the sequel to it. He wrote a sequel to The Shining, Stephen King, a couple of years ago. And I read that last year. And it's good. It's not as good, but it holds. It's all right.
Why is he redoing it?
He's not. There's a movie company redoing it.
I mean,
have you seen the preview for it?
This is where I'm
eerie.
Torn because the movie It with Pennywise the Clown, that was it a miniseries?
Yeah.
That was sensational, freaky, scary, everything you want from your Stephen King.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, why are they even bothering to make it a big picture thing? And then when I saw the previews, it looks really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I just don't understand why they remake things. Like even the Psycho movie that they did frame by frame.
Right.
I saw it. Anne Heche was in it, and it was...
And Vince Vaughn.
And Vince Vaughn, and it was good, but then it's like, why am I watching this? I already saw it.
It didn't need to be remade. That's a guy named Gus Van Sant who directed it, who's actually really, really an inventive director, and I understand it was an experiment of what if we made it today with today's star. It was a good idea, but it was unnecessary.
It was unnecessary.
Right.
Yeah. And I would say it is unnecessary, but yeah, it looks super creepy.
It looks so scary, doesn't it? All right, that's it for today's show. We want to thank everybody who helped out. Joey Gelman filled in. I thought really good, Wendy. I'll battle you on this. I thought Joey did a fine job today filling in for Kevin.
Joey Gelman is welcome anytime.
He's good people, that Joey Gelman. If you have your own shows or podcasts, call Joey Gelman. We'll make it work.
Or if you just want an extra dinner guest.
Right.
Invite him.
He's happy to help out. Big show tomorrow, and when I say big, I say that because I don't know what's coming up tomorrow. So I'm assuming it's going to be a big one tomorrow.
Well, it's the return of Kevin Richter.
He'll be back. He'll have a story.
I'm sure he will.
He will. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I'm Bill. That's Wendy. You know who you are. Stay tuned for nothing. Nothing.
Nothing's coming up next.
I don't think anything. Nope. Nothing.
I'll enjoy that.
We'll see you in 23 hours. Bye, everybody.